Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Vitality Explorer podcast. My name is Dr. Alan Mishra. Thank you very much for listening. As always on the podcast, we like to start with a quote, an inspirational vitality quote. And this one's from author Becca Lee. And here it is, quote, "If you seek peace, be still. If you seek wisdom, be silent. If you seek love, be yourself. If you seek peace, be still. If you seek wisdom, be silent. And if you seek love, be yourself," from Becca Lee. So our goal with the Vitality Explorer podcast is to enhance your physical, mental, social, and or spiritual well-being. Thank you to all the new listeners. We are really excited to have a lot of new people finding this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying it, please recommend it to somebody else or leave us a 5-star rating. Our goal, as always, is to help you make deposits into your Vitality bank account, to help you understand how vitality is a skill and a gift that you give yourself by taking ownership over your decisions. So this week's topics are 75 is the new 25. That's the first one. The second one is social media making you sick is the second one. And the final one is exploring the link between spirituality and longevity. So let's talk about 75 is the new 25 and really how strength training can help you maintain your muscle. We've talked about this several times on Vitality Explorers, but as always, we search the literature in trying to identify specific actionable pieces of scientific advice. And this one is really interesting. And it kind of implies that a 75-year-old man can have the same type of muscle as a 25-year-old. And that's a staggering conclusion from this paper. Here's the title of the paper: The Impact of Lifelong Strength versus Endurance Training on Muscle Fiber Morphology and Phenotype Composition in Older Men. Now, the study found for the first time that strength training preserves neural innervation. And neural innervation, that basically means that the nerve connections between your brain and your muscle. And we talk a lot about, you know, maintaining your muscle, but what we don't talk enough about, in my opinion, is maintaining the connection between your brain and your muscle. That's the neural connection. And this particular paper suggests that we need to think about that more. Now, 42 men were included in the study, and they were divided into four groups by age, type of exercise, and level of exercise. The older groups, there are three older groups, and they all averaged somewhere between 72 to 75 years old. And the younger group was 25 years old. And here are the four groups. The first was older strength-trained masters athletes from weightlifting clubs. So they found them in weightlifting clubs. Yes, there are weightlifting clubs for guys in their 70s. And they defined that as basically 5 repetitions of heavy exercise loads, with each of which was 80% of the one repetition maximum. And that could be things like squats, deadlift, and bench press. And then the second group were older endurance-trained master athletes from track and field clubs. And these are people who were participating in distances of 3,000 meters or more. Okay, so they weren't just, you know, doing sprints. They were just more endurance type of athletes. The third group was older recreational active controls. So these weren't couch potatoes. These were people who were hiking or skiing or doing things like that. And then the younger group, the 25-year-olds, were recruited from a local average age, 25, were recruited from a local college. And here's one of the quotes from the paper, which is, it can be found on the Vitality Explorer Substack site, including the pictures that we're going to talk about here in a second, is the quote, "The main findings of the present study were that strength-trained masters athletes had a type 2 fiber distribution similar to young individuals and a higher proportion of type 2 fibers compared to the endurance-trained masters athletes and recreational active older adults." They have a beautiful picture. It's sort of stained in blue and red. And when you look at the young muscle versus the older guy's muscle, they did a little biopsy of the muscle from what's called the vastus lateralis, which is part of your quadriceps. It's a classic place where you can take a tiny piece of muscle and you're not going to miss it. They can look at it under a microscope and then they take a picture. And the pictures that you can see on the Vitality Explorer Substack site, I think, are really interesting because you can see that the young muscle looks like the older strength trained muscle, and it looks very different than the old endurance trained athletes, and especially the older just recreational athletes. And the percentage of fibers, excuse me, importantly, the percentage of atrophic fibers, fibers that are atrophied, were similar in the 75-year-old master strength trained group compared to the 25-year-old college students. That's pretty amazing. Even more amazing is the one strength maximum and or the rate of force development was similar in the two groups. So here's sort of the Vitality Explorer analysis and recommendation. I think this paper adds to the mountain, the absolute Everest-sized mountain of evidence suggesting that our musculoskeletal system is modifiable until the day we die. All right, that's really important. It also should help convince us at any age to do some form of resistance training because aerobic training alone will not maintain your muscle. Okay, let me say that again. Aerobic training alone will not maintain your muscle. So you can't just go out and hike or run. You need to do some sort of resistance training. And I think it also can dispel the myth that we will lose our muscle as we age. So don't think you have to join a powerlifting club to maintain your muscle. I think that can be really intimidating, right? You're not going to go join some club like that, but it's important to start today to do any form of resistance training if you're able. So you can work with a physical therapist, a trainer to develop a customized strength program. You can also check with your physician first, but here are some examples of some simple resistance training exercises. You can get a biceps, you can do some biceps curls with a lightweight. You can start with a pound, 2 pounds, 5 pounds, 10 pounds, whatever you can tolerate, and do 8 repetitions slowly for each arm twice per day. So biceps curls, set of 8, just once a day for each arm, excuse me, twice a day for each arm. That's a simple upper extremity strengthening one. The second one, which we don't quite think about as resistance training, is a bike. So if you did just 20 minutes on an exercise bike or a regular biking 3 times per week, that can help maintain all of the muscles of your lower extremity, your pelvis, your hip, your knees, your ankles, everything. And then the one that can be done anywhere, anytime, is a sit-to-stand exercise. And this is a form of resistance. It's just body weight resistance. And you can do a set of 5 or all the way up to 10 of them twice per day. And there's a video up on the Vitality Explorer Substack site where you can see somebody doing a sit-to-stand exercise. And it's exactly what it sounds like. You're in a chair and you go from a seated position to a standing position and then slowly sit back down. And during COVID in my practice, I had to come up with things to do where people couldn't go to the gym. They couldn't go see a physical therapist. And this sit-to-stand exercise is probably the most important thing I learned to help people maintain or improve their lower extremity strength because it's really, really simple. So begin today to strengthen your muscles. Remember, your musculoskeletal system is modifiable until the day you die. If you work on this relentlessly, maniacally, kind of like if you're brushing your teeth, do something with resistance. It'll help you maintain your mobility. It'll help you maintain your muscle. And the science suggests that it can be all the way into your 70s, similar to people in their 25, in their around 25 years old. So let's move on to the second one for this week. And that is social media making you sick? I think this is a potentially landmark paper, suggests that social media is linked to increased blood inflammatory markers. Again, you can find the references on the Vitality Explorer Substack site. If you're enjoying what you're listening with this podcast, please share it with other people. Please also leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get it. But this paper, and the title of which is Social Media Use and Its Concurrent and Subsequent Relation to a Biologic Marker of Inflammation, a Short-Term Longitudinal Study. And this study basically showed that social media is associated with increased inflammation in your blood. Now, acute inflammation is important because it's a normal response to fighting off infection or to help heal a wound after you cut yourself or after surgery. Chronic inflammation, however, is terrible for our health and vitality. All right. Chronic inflammation is associated with serious issues, serious diseases like heart disease, diabetes, cancer. Now, there's a particular marker. It's called CRP or C-reactive protein, and that is a commonly tested marker for the body's overall inflammatory status, and it can be measured by a blood test, okay? And the study we're discussing today measured the total time 138 college students used social media per week for 5 weeks by recording their screen time on a mobile application. And these social media sites included things like Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, also known as X. They published a study, they gathered the data from the study prior to the transition from Twitter to X. But CRP, C-reactive protein, again, a measurement of your overall body's inflammation, was tested at baseline and then at the end of the study. And the researchers found the total amount of social media time per week, as measured on their phone by that screen time app, was associated with higher levels of inflammation as measured by CRP. And here's some of the reasons they suggested why social media can increase inflammation in the paper. And I think this is part of what's important. It's not just observing that more time on a screen using social media is associated with more inflammation. Here are the three things they talked about. Number one, excess social media can, quote, undermine the quality and quantity of sleep. Number two, prolonged social media may, quote, contribute to sedentary lifestyles and physical inactivity. And number three, social media may, quote, also increase stress, which can elevate inflammation. So less sleep, less activity, and more stress. All of those are possible mechanisms by which social media can increase your inflammation. So here's the analysis. This research provides objective biologic evidence supporting the claim that social media increases chronic inflammation. That's a really, really important factor to discuss. And these were, I think, 138 college students. This wasn't a study of like 10 or 15 people. It's 138 college students. And they found that the more time they were on their phones on social media, the higher their level of chronic inflammation. And this information should be taken very seriously, because chronic inflammation is flat out terrible for our vitality, as for the reasons we talked about. It's associated with life-threatening diseases and faster aging. So I consider that I suggest that we all go on what I call a social media diet, and that's to try to limit your social media by 1,000 seconds less per day. That's about 17 minutes. Just stop doom scrolling on your social media feeds, because it is very clearly a serious life and time leak. And I think we can take control over our life and our vitality by reducing our time on social media. And now the science strongly suggests that we could have lower levels of inflammation. So again, inflammation is connected to aging. Inflammation is connected to chronic disease. But we are fueling that inflammation in our bodies by being on social media. Not my opinion. That's based on this paper. And that's why I think it's so important to read the literature. This is a somewhat obscure paper, but it's a very well done paper that suggests that social media is clearly not good for your body's inflammatory status. So let's go on to the third and final thing we're going to talk about here for the Vitality Explorer podcast this week. Again, my name is Dr. Alan Mishra. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine specialist, and the founder of Vitality Explorers and Viverse. And the final one we're going to talk about this week is exploring the spirituality longevity link and the science behind why faith may add years to your life. Now, this time of year, when this podcast is getting published, is really important for several of the world's major religions, including Christianity for Easter, Judaism and Passover, Islam and Ramadan, and Hinduism and Holi. All four of those religions consider this time of year important. There can also be an important time of reflection for non-religious people just because of the beginning of spring, right? So too often, way too often, we fail to incorporate spirituality and religion when we discuss vitality. Let's not make that mistake. And here's how we're going to do it today, right now. And again, this week's Vitality Explorer podcast, I think, has some staggeringly important information. We talked about how when you're 75, the muscle can still be, good. The previous one was about how social media can increase your inflammation. And this one is from this paper called The Link Between Spirituality and Longevity. And there's several amazing, what I call dime level quotes for us to go over. Here's three to consider to start. Number one, higher levels of spirituality and religiosity are associated with lower risk of mortality. Lower risk of dying, okay? Number two, religious service attendance was associated with a lower risk of death from despair. And that's things like death from despair was defined as related to drugs, alcohol, and suicide. Number three, integrating spirituality and religiosity assessment and intervention programs into clinical care can help each person obtain better and more complete well-being. Those are all direct quotes from this paper, all right? It's very clear that spirituality and religion are important to our overall vitality. And I think sometimes we get these mixed up, so I wanted to spend a little bit of time going over the differences and similarities between religion and spirituality. And the paper helps us. And here's four quotes from the paper. Number one, quote, "Religion involves beliefs, practices, and rituals related to the transcendent, where the transcendent is God." Number two, "Religion is also an organized system of beliefs, practices, and symbols." Okay, so that's kind of defining religion. Then it goes on to talk about spirituality. And here's a quote. "Spirituality is distinguished from all other things, humanism, values, morals, and mental health, by its connection to that which is sacred, the transcendent. The transcendent is that which is outside of the self and yet also within the self." And then finally, "Spirituality is a domain, inside or outside a religion, that can be present in any human experience, such as values, morals, ethics, love, compassion, art, connection, inner peace, hope, joy, energy, strength, support, friendship, solidarity, and comfort." So very important to understand that you can be spiritual without being religious, and spirituality is a component of religion. I think that's how it goes down to. There's several other quotes from this very important paper, and you can read the reference and look at it. And this was just published this year. They discuss religion and spirituality and how it can sometimes be challenging to have that conversation, but the science suggests it's a critical component of our vitality. Check out these two pieces of data from the paper. Number one, spirituality and religiosity correlated with longevity in 75% of the studies with the most rigorous methodology. This is not baloney science. This is solid, hardcore science that suggests that the more religious or more spiritual you are, the more it's correlated with your longevity. And this is another specific study that was quoted within that study, and that is, quote, "Attending a religious service greater than or equal to once per week was associated with a 33% lower risk of all-cause mortality, all reasons for dying, a 27% lower cardiovascular mortality, and a 21% lower cancer mortality." So collectively, all this data suggests that we should pay way more attention to our spirituality if we want to lead our most vital lives. And the paper also then explored some of the mechanisms that are in play. And I think this is another strength of this study. And there's sort of a graphical outline of how can spirituality be connected to longevity. One, there could be social support from being connected to a religious or spiritual group. You could learn some positive coping mechanisms. You can identify a purpose. You can be around people who have better health behaviors. And it can be spirituality and religion can be related to stress reduction. The paper then broke down these specific parameters that can also lead to better things like specifically better immune function. And if your immune system doesn't work very well, it can increase your risk of cancer, better cardiovascular status, and adherence to recommended treatments, such as like your prescribed medications. So you've got all these things that are going there. You can see some of the graphs on the Vitality Explorer Substack site. Essentially, you know, being connected to your religion or spirituality can improve the idea of healthy aging and longevity. Now, the paper went on to emphasize that these connections are correlations, but they do not prove causation. So you can't say that because you're religious or spiritual that these are there, but they are correlations. So people need to do much more research to figure out what's really going on, because it's clearly a complex interaction. So the Vitality Explorer analysis and recommendations are, to start with, I've said this before on Vitality Explorers, my definition of spirituality is belief in something bigger than yourself. I don't think you can be your most vital version of yourself if it's all about you. If your life is designed only to optimize what's best for you, you will never be your most vital self. Now, obviously, you need to do a lot of things for yourself, and we've talked about a lot of versions of self-care, but part of your purpose for being on the planet, in order to be your most vital version, is to be in support of something bigger than you, and that's your spirituality. Again, that can be religious, doesn't have to be, but belief in something bigger than you will help improve your sense of vitality. So I'd suggest that we pause this week consider our position in the universe. If it's a holiday weekend for you, take some time out to go to a religious service. Even if you're not religious, take some time to take a walk. Just spend some time meditating, praying, or just simply thinking about why you are here. And this is not a waste of your time. Science suggests that our vitality rises when we explore our spirituality. So I welcome everybody's comments on this. I know this can be challenging. I know this can be controversial. I want to wish happy holidays to all those who are celebrating this week, this month, or this time of year, and encourage you to read and make your own conclusions about the science that has been presented in this week's podcast. Again, the Vitality Explorer podcast is part of Vitality Explorers. You can see the details on Substack. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine specialist. I've spent my entire career working in an academic facility. I've also been a reviewer for a variety of different journals. And what I've tried to do with this work is to distill down the world's literature into specific, shall we call them snackable scientific info snacks, I should say, where people can try to apply some of this information to help improve their physical, mental, social, and or spiritual well-being. So again, this week we've talked about how 75 is the new 25. We've talked about how social media can increase your inflammation and the chronic inflammation in your body and potentially make you sick. And then we finish by exploring the crucial, the critical, important between spirituality and longevity. Let's finish again with that quote from author Becca Lee, quote, "If you seek peace, be still. If you seek wisdom, be silent. And if you seek love, be yourself." Thank you very much for listening to the Vitality Explorer podcast. I appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you each week. It is an absolute joy to produce this. I hope everyone has a wonderful week. And until next time, as always, we get out there and we do our best to dare to be vital. Thank you very much for listening.